Okay, time to bring on Rahat Hook now from the site red94.net. Maybe you'll, with the new additions, Rahat, you'll have to change it to red 18 if the Rockets win the championship this year. They've got a lot of talent, but obviously some great teams in front of them as well. So I want to start with this for you. Like, where were you? What was your reaction when you found out that Chris Paul had been traded to the Houston Rockets?
Right. So if you recall at the time, I think the expectation was that if they were going to get Chris Paul, it was going to be in free agency. So that was the first big shock. But even stepping back from that, despite all the interest that was rumored to be had from both sides, I thought Chris Paul was using the Rockets as leverage. I thought he was going to return to the Clippers. I thought there might be interest in the Spurs. I don't think anybody really realized the extent of that relationship that James Harden and Chris Paul somehow at some point had been developing in secret. They seemed to be best friends suddenly. And because it seems like around the league, you know of the high end friendships that exist. I mean, there was so much that was made of Kevin Durant and James Harden from their time in Oklahoma City and would the Rockets have a chance. But I had no idea that these two guys were seemingly plotting something or were on such good terms and the Rockets were in the picture. But clearly, that was the case. And so, yeah, when that happened, I was absolutely floored.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, just that he even was going to go there. And then the fact that it was a trade with him opting in, I mean, it was something that, I mean, everyone just assumed it was fait accompli that he was going to opt out. But now he has maybe some financial reasons to do that if he plays as well. And then he could get the 5-year deal this year. I like you, thought, oh, maybe he's going to use these other teams as leverage. He doesn't really want to leave LA. He wants to get the 5-year max deal from them because he's already pretty old and, you know, maybe get a no trade, get all the bells and whistles from the Clippers. But yeah, going to the Rockets. And now, I mean, we'll see what ends up happening. This is way too early to discuss Paul's impending free agency, but it's perhaps useful for him that he expects to have a good year on a really good team and he'll get paid a fair amount, obviously, this year as well. Not quite the $35 million that he could have gotten, but then he can maybe lock in next year, or if it doesn't work out, God forbid for Houston fans, go somewhere else. But before we get into this team, though, I want to talk a little bit about how you thought they played. And we know what they were last year. Great three-point shooting team. James Harden, many would think, should have won MVP. He was awesome. All the three-point shooters, everything that Daryl Morey did turned out really well in that summer of 2016. And you were definitely very right about them being a lot better than I thought. I was 46 wins. Their over-under was 41. You had 50, which I scoffed at, and we were both way too low, as it turned out. But what happened in that series against the Spurs? I think that is something that maybe we can go back and look at and see how they tried to address some of those flaws this season.
Right. And I think the big question really is what happened with James Harden in that game 6. And I know the Rockets fans listening to this right now, maybe follow me or maybe don't follow me yet. They won't like to hear this, but it was really one of the most baffling performances I can remember ever seeing. And I've seen a lot of people from the Houston side quick to make excuses and for Harden.
It's right up there with, you know, Kobe Bryant's game 7. And I think it was 2006 where he basically didn't shoot it at all. Or LeBron James game 5 in 2010 against the Celtics, like really, or LeBron James in the 2011 finals. Like, it really is right up there with just those inexplicable performances when they just could not score against a Spurs team that didn't have Kawhi Leonard.
Right. And I think what you do in bringing in Chris Paul, I think it's not just on the court. I think that's something that's obvious, just having a secondary ball handler, I guess in Paul's case, a primary ball handler to relieve that pressure from Harden. But I think what he's going to do is address Harden's biggest problem, which is potentially mental. And I think that James Harden, he may not always have that intensity. And I think Chris Paul is really going to help with that. And so I think with Chris Paul, I think that addition, it just adds so many dimensions in the locker room, on the court. And what they did this summer, you didn't really lose anything. I mean, you're looking at a team that was second in offense and 18th in defense last year. They're not going to take a step back offensively. They might be better. They're probably going to be better, but, you know, there isn't really that much room for improvement if you look at it at how amazing they were last last year as a top 10 all-time offense. But with the additions that you made, I think you can expect to get above 18th, some maybe in the top 10 defensively. What do you think about that? You're switching out Lou Williams and Sam Decker, and you're adding in P.J. Tucker, Bahamute. Chris Paul may be the only point guard statistically who's an upgrade over Beverly. And so I think that you're improving your team without really hurting it. And I think that's sometimes difficult to do, because when you're adjusting personnel, sometimes you have to take from one area to add somewhere. But it didn't really seem like they lost anything.
Yeah, I think really your only concern is that Mbamute and Tucker, especially if those guys are going to play together, and that maybe if Trevor Ariza takes a step back now as he's coming into, I think, his age 33 season, that maybe the shooting that they've relied on won't quite be there. The first two preseason games, when they've averaged, I think, 49 three-point attempts a game, and I think in all three of them, although one of them was against non-NBA competition, they hit over 20 three-pointers, which has never been done before in the regular season, to do that in three consecutive games. So it certainly looks like they're going to be firing away. Chris Paul not even shooting any mid-range shots either in the preseason, but maybe that'll change a little bit. So yeah, I think you have to imagine they won't be much worse offensively. You know, Lou Williams didn't actually play all that well as a Rocket, and Clint Capella presumably will play a little bit more. I mean, they aren't going to play Ryan Anderson as much, probably. That'll probably hurt their offense a little bit, but they also have Chris Paul, and so the offense with Harden on the bench should be better. So yeah, I think they project about the same offensively, and maybe is more difficult to stop offensively with, you know, when you're really going up against good teams in that playoff crucible, and then defensively actually having someone who can defend on the wing. I mean, you could, the defensive lineups that they can put out there now with Mbamute, Tucker, Ariza, and Chris Paul potentially around Harden. They tried already in the preseason some lineups with Tucker at center. I think those are ones you can get really excited about for the playoffs in particular.
Yeah, I think Tucker at center, I think that's the one that's the most intriguing. To step back, though, regarding Chris Paul, I think that, and this is also the rationale behind potentially acquiring Carmelo Anthony, which we know obviously did not work out. But I think what you do here in having Chris Paul is that you're able to finally somewhat diversify the offense. I mean, for the Rockets, it's been all about threes and at the basket. But I think, as many people have noted, in the postseason, particularly against the Spurs, when those stringent defenses are able to chase guys off the three-point line, I think that's when that ability to utilize every part of the court is essential. And so with Paul, I think just at those margins, I think that gives you an advantage there where you can diversify the offense. I think that's where what Anthony would have done. Obviously, that didn't work out. But that adds another dimension to the Rockets. And as you said, defensively, I think you could run out a lineup with Tucker at the five. You could have Bahamute at the four. And so that gives you so much flexibility defensively, where previously, you know, if Ryan Anderson wasn't hitting, you almost had to have Ariza at the four. That was wearing him out. And so just so many more options now for Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, there definitely are. And I think in that Spurs series in particular, the strategy that Greg Popovich went to, one that I did not advocate but actually worked extremely well, was leaving Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge under the rim to take away shots at the rim, taking away shots at the three-point line, and knowing that Houston wasn't necessarily able or willing to take advantage in the mid-range. Certainly no one other than Harden had that capability. And we'll see. We'll talk a little bit more about the strengths and weaknesses and how well they can do offensively, especially against the Warriors, if they are going to play Tucker and Mbamute. Is a very interesting question for me. First, though, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this. If you're a fantasy basketball fan, you're no doubt really excited for the season to start. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try what I think is the best platform for fantasy basketball, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but much different than traditional salary cap leagues. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like your season long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. And the reason a snake draft works better is that each draft is unique. It's much harder for these people who are making fantasy basketball essentially their profession to anticipate everything ahead of time. So it's much more fair for the casual player. And once you've made your draft, just set it and forget it. That's it. No trades, no waiver wires to deal with. Draft even takes care of last minute injuries for you. They start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now, and you can play for cold hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft draft for everyone. So come and join me on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in the App Store and you can join a game in minutes, or you can play right from your computer as well on draft.com, whatever you want. And for a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code. And of course, you know what that is. Capspace, easy to remember because we talk about Capspace all the time in the program. That'll also let them know that you came from us, of course. That's right. Play a real money game for free. Just use the promo code Capspace on your first deposit with the Draft app and draft.com. Okay, so the big storyline as soon as they acquired Chris Paul was, how are he and Harden going to play together? These guys both need the ball. They're probably the two guys, it wouldn't shock me, I haven't looked at it, as having close to the largest time of percentage or percentage time of possession of any two players in the league. You're probably pretty close there. So how do you think that is going to work? And what are the noises been coming out of camp about like what they can do schematically to make sure that both of these guys can eat?
Right. And you're already seeing glimpses of this in the preseason, and not to give too much weight in what we're seeing early on, particularly because one of those games they played was not against an NBA team, but they're pushing the pace a lot more.
And they
more.
Played the Knicks too.
So. so two non-NBA teams, if you will. Chris Paul seems to be pushing the pace a lot more than he normally would be. But I think really what you're going to be seeing is utilizing them both in sets where if Harden's the primary ball handler and he drives and nothing's there, he can kick it back out and restart completely with Chris Paul. And you saw that last year with Eric Gordon as a secondary playmaker, but I mean, Chris Paul or substitute Harden there, that's a completely different level. And so I think you can utilize them in the same sets by getting them involved in actions like that. And I think for Chris Paul, it's whether or not there's a willingness to push the pace consistently. We know he really likes to dictate things, pound the ball into the ground. James Harden, that was a problem for him early on. I think what the big question is going to be, I think there's, you know, it's going to be smooth sailing for the most part during the game. But I think the question, as many people have noted, is late in crunch time. What happens the first time that you're in a close game against a very good opponent? And how do you sort out who gets the ball on that final possession? Is it going to be Chris Paul? Is it going to be James Harden? I think that's the real question mark. But I think the fact that both of these guys are very good spot-up shooters, and I think that's one thing that's very, very much not talked about enough. The fact that both of these guys are very good spot-up shooters, it helps the potential for them to be able to mesh together. I think with LeBron and Dwayne Wade early on, that was part of the problem in figuring things out. But Harden throughout his career, I think last year he was 38.9% on spot-ups. And I think he had a higher percentage in previous years. Paul was 50%, but a very low amount of attempts last year, but 50% on spot up catch and shoot threes. Harden also, there's some stats that some of my followers tweeted at me where statistically he had the least amount of open looks on threes out of any player in the NBA. And so I think that just the fact that these guys can play off of each other off the ball, you look at the way Harden played in OKC, you look at the fact that these guys actually wanted to play together, I think that bodes well.
Yeah, I think you're right about that too. And it's not like there aren't really any other guys that need it as well. You know, there isn't a post player who's got to like get his touches. They don't really run a lot of stuff through the elbow. And Mike D'Antoni certainly has never had an unhappy offensive players in his system. You mentioned the crunch time offense though, and that's something that I think is going to really should be watched, because as good as the Rockets were offensively, I thought this reared its head in the Spurs series and just in general throughout the season, the last few years, really, even in the Harden era, I think this has been the case. The crunch time offense has been Harden just dribbling around at half court for 15 seconds. They lose that pushing the pace. And then, you know, he doesn't even initiate the play until there's 10 seconds left. And there usually ends up being a switch against what'll be a pretty good defensive team, especially in the playoffs. And then he ends up having to just kind of take a tired three. We saw that really down the end of that game five in San Antonio, which I'm sure they're still kicking themselves over having lost that one with Kawhi Leonard out as well. So I, you know, we don't need to belabor the point here because we haven't seen them yet. But I think, and Chris Paul, on the other hand, his teams have always been extremely clutch. And while he likes to dominate the ball, you know, he'll at least get others involved as well. And he's got maybe a more diverse offensive game during the late stages.
It's a very fascinating philosophical question that I've been wondering for years now. Forget about the offensive explosion last year. I mean, just going back to the entirety of the Harden era. era, we get back to this question of, you have this great offense. Why does it always bog down to the exact same thing at the end of the game? Like, why do you get away from what is working? And I almost feel like there's this expectation from NBA players that regardless of what takes place the first 46 minutes of the game, that isolation is what is expected to be the end route at the end of the game. And it's something I've just never understood. And as you said, that's what happened at the end of the Spurs series.
Yeah, I understand it. I think a lot of it is just from both coaches and players is, hey, this is really important. We got to make sure we want to get the ball into the hands of our best player. We want him making the play to make the shot. And I mean, that's what people think a lot, right? Like if you see a few possessions go back and forth kind of frantically, you'll see players just like, all right, you know, palms down to the ground. All right, let's slow it down. You know, with the idea like, okay, like if we got it, because you think about like, okay, let's take our time here. Like, let's not rush it. Generally in life, like taking your time and doing things slowly, like is a better approach, right? When it's really important, like take your time, don't rush it. But, you know, in basketball, I don't know that that's necessarily the case here. All right, go ahead. One more thing. Yeah.
And I think the counterpoint to what I just said and to your point is that by having the ball in your best player's hands, you're minimizing the risk. And so anytime a possession involves an inferior offensive player, you're necessarily increasing the risk. And so inherent within that, an inferior player, his nerves are going to increase at that time. So presumably a great offensive player like James Harden, he's going to be more effective in that time. And so I think there's an inherent aspect of risk built in there as well.
So let's talk about more about this team. I mean, is there anyone that you look at as someone who can get better from last season?
Yeah, so looking up and down the roster, the only guy that you would consider a young prospect, I mean, they don't have those young blue chip prospects that some teams have, but Clint Capella is really the only guy that I would point to. And I wouldn't just talk about whether or not he can get better or will he get better. It's he needs to get better, because this was something I wasn't aware of previously until last preseason when Mike D'Antoni talked about this in the press. About he mentioned Capella's stamina issues, and I didn't even realize that this was an issue early on in his rookie year under Kevin McHale. This was never brought up. I thought that it was just a situation where they wanted to bring him along slowly, but Mike D'Antoni always talked about the fact that Capella needed to increase his stamina. And so we saw he played, I think was it 24 minutes a game. He got gassed pretty quickly at times. And while he is, I think he's, aside from adding a three-point shot, I think as an overall skill set, I think he's about as perfect of a fit you could get for James Harden as there is. And then defensively, he protects the rim. He's great at moving his feet on the perimeter, but he really, really struggles against bigger offensive players. And we saw how much, how difficult it was against Oklahoma City, against Steven Adams. And so I think that he's the guy that really needs to take the next step for the Rockets and being able to play more minutes and also being able to play against bigger offensive players. Because what happened routinely is that whenever he was getting bullied down low, the Rockets had to quickly come in with Nene. And Nene, he's getting older. He's not a long-term fit. And so the Rockets really need Clint Capella to take the next step, especially because he's coming up on a very important free agency, restricted free agency the following summer. And so the Rockets need to make a decision on him. I don't expect them to let him get away or anything like that. But I mean, perhaps if he does not take the next step, if he's still not able to play more than 25 minutes a game, I might even look into dealing him if his value is high. I don't know that I would make a long-term commitment to him at the type of money that he would command if he can't give you more than 25 minutes a game. But all of the reports out of camp, it seemed like he's been working on that, but we'll have to see once the regular season rolls around.
Yeah, and with Capella, they've got Nene coming off the bench. Also, I think that although he's been injured right now, that Tarik Black can give them some quality minutes. I thought he's been an underrated player in LA the last couple of years. And then they also have the option of going with Ryan Anderson at center at times. They did that last year. They could go with Tucker at center at times. So I think, you know, him playing half the game isn't the end of the world, but I think just even in the minutes he's out there being able to give more effort. And you mentioned, you know, 24 minutes a game, only played 65 games last year, so a little over 1500 minutes for Capella. So his stamina, and then I think also just continuing to evolve with his recognition on defense. And I think his ability to, because we're talking about, I mean, this team is going to be almost certainly a top three seed. It's difficult to imagine them falling any lower than that. Four, top four for dead certain, unless they just have catastrophic injuries. So it's really about the playoffs for these guys, and how well can he move his feet on the perimeter? Can he switch out on some of those Warriors shooters? Can his pick and roll defense evolve to elite along with his physical tools? Can he just get better at the pattern recognition of defense? That's a big question for me. Is it possible? Do you see anyone else who really would be an improvement candidate on this squad from last year? I mean, a lot of the young guys are gone, so it's really hard to say that.
Right. And I mean, you look at the secondary players. I mean, so obviously you have Chris Paul and James Harden. I mean, with Harden, he might, if it's possible, be better just by being even more efficient playing off the ball with Chris Paul. But as far as Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, I don't even, especially Trevor Ariza, I don't really see any path to them being better in terms of the overall productivity that they're giving you by virtue of the amount of games that they played last year. In that Ryan Anderson last year, 72 games, that was the second highest amount of games Ryan Anderson has played in his entire career. Eric Gordon, 75 games last year. He started off extremely hot, but then he dropped off considerably after the All-Star break. And so with those guys, particularly those two guys, I worry that you might have seen the best of them last year, and you might see more of a regression to their career norms, not in terms of their abilities, but in terms of the overall amount that they're giving you by the number of games that they're giving you. And so that's the concern that I have.
Yeah, both Gordon and Anderson, now they were coming from just the NBA netherworld in terms of training staffs in New Orleans, and so you might say, hey, now that they're in Houston, they're in much better shape. But yeah, I mean, part of the reason that those contracts were so risky, and that Gordon I didn't pan, but Anderson we did, and Anderson is a bad contract. You know, they tried to trade him this offseason and they couldn't. That's why the Melo deal in large part failed. But you know, he was important to what they did last year. But yeah, expecting them to be as healthy as they were might be unlikely. I could see Gordon just shooting a better percentage from three, that 37%. I could even see Ariza shooting a better percentage, and Harden as well, just because they're going to have Chris Paul out there, a little more space to set them up. There won't be forcing as many threes, perhaps. What about defensively for Harden? Do you think that with a reduced offensive load, he probably had the largest offensive load of any player in the league, maybe Westbrook is the only other one who comes to mind there, can he continue to improve defensively?
Yeah, I mean, you hope so. There's really no way to know. I mean, you just hope that Chris Paul can get to him. But I mean, there's really no way to predict that, honestly.
Yeah, well, and it'll be interesting to see too, because in a lot of those lineups, you mentioned when they would go to Ariza at the four because Anderson couldn't defend his position well enough against a lot of the elite teams. When they played Ariza at the four, Harden was the four defensively. And so now when you, with Tucker and or Mbamute having one more good defender on the floor, that maybe Harden won't be stuck guarding someone in the post. But on the other hand, that's kind of like the place to hide him, so he just doesn't have to do as much, because he's not going to like chase shooters around screens either against some of the best team.
Right. And I don't have the statistic right now, and it may have changed just factoring in the end of the year. But at one point, I don't know if this was last year, but I do remember pointing out that Harden was one of the best post defenders. I don't know if this sounds familiar to you, but he was one of statistically one of the best post defenders in the league. But now we saw what happened in the San Antonio series, where when he was asked to face Pau Gasol, it really tired him out. And so it's interesting that you bring this up, because one thing that I always advocated specifically last year was that I thought where you could really unlock Harden's potential as kind of a secret weapon in a weird D'Antoni way, the real potential that I saw was that if you played Harden as power forward, you're basically having him guard the power forward, where he's pretty decent, at least he's better than when he's guarding wings, but then you're creating all sorts of problems at the other end offensively. So that was something I advocated strongly, but we saw what the Spurs did, and having to guard Pau Gasol really, really tired him out in that Spurs series.
Yeah, and not a lot of teams have LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol in the front court to where you're really going to be, you know, he's going to have to guard one of those two guys. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the rotation here for Mike D'Antoni. Who's going to start for these guys?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think what you can expect is Paul and Harden as locks in the backcourt. I think even though PJ Tucker might be better than Ariza at this point, I think Ariza, just by seniority, I think he's a lock at small forward. I think
Ariza is better than him personally.
You think so? Okay.
Well, because Tucker, I mean, if you go back and watch that Toronto's series against the Cavs and the Bucks, that he really is, and maybe he'll be better in this system, but it's underrated how bad he is offensively. Other than shooting corner threes, he really does absolutely nothing, right? And he's not really that comfortable taking above the break threes. And Ariza, you know, has been in this system for a long time. He shoots it with no conscience. I think that teams are going to be, you know, with Ariza, it's like, okay, we kind of don't really like leaving him open. Whereas Tucker, it's like, okay, you're going to have to make two or three before we're going to really guard you out there. And Mbah Mute is even further into that boat. So I think, you know, Tucker in certain matchups, I think, if you're going to say you got to guard LeBron James or you got to guard Kevin Durant, really some of the bigger wings, Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, Tucker will just get into guys, and he just has more versatility to guard fours and even fives as well. So I like that aspect of it more, but I think in pretty much every other aspect, I believe Ariza is the superior player.
See, I may be just entirely overrating Tucker just from not having seen him nearly as much as I've seen Ariza. With Ariza, I don't know how much weight you give to DRPM, but Ariza 23rd among small forwards last year. Tucker was 12th. Ariza shooting 34% on threes. I thought Ariza, I mean, this was something that I strongly felt all of last year, was that that was the position that they had to upgrade, because it was very difficult for me to watch Ariza, as great as the offense was. If he didn't have a wide open shot, he was just so unskilled. It was very difficult for him to do anything other than a straight line drive. And his athleticism obviously is waning. And so it was very painful on the eyes. I don't think that his defense is anywhere near as great as his reputation would lead one to believe. And I think the statistics kind of bear that out. But I think you're certainly correct that he is much more versatile than PJ Tucker is, in terms of he's a longer, rangier player, whereas Tucker, he's at this point probably better suited for a small ball four. So I may just not have seen Tucker enough if I'm considering him better than.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it even is just in the perception, because like Tucker would have these games where he's taking, playing 30 minutes, he's taking one or two shots, and he's not looking for a shot. He's not a threat. He's not being guarded. And certainly teams like the Warriors, OKC, the Spurs, they're going to execute the scouting report. They're going to make Tucker beat them. And teams will do that to some extent with Ariza as well. But Ariza at least is willing enough to fire away. And Ariza at least, I realize he has some limitations attacking the basket. I was surprised at how good he was at times doing that in the playoffs. But I mean, Tucker is another level in terms of just like his lack of lift, driving to the basket. He's not going to drive to the basket and finish basically ever. So they play different roles. But I do think you've hit on something here, that between Ariza, Tucker, and Mbah Mute, they need those guys to perform. They need those guys to hit shots, especially against the best teams. And that to me could be one of the underrated pain points. Although all those guys, are at an age where they could really drop off significantly. If that happens, that might be one of the ways where this team could end up disappointing.
Yeah. And I think there's just been so many seasons in Rockets history where they come in the off season with all of these veteran acquisitions, and you're feeling very good about the depth chart, but then it just turns out that they show their age. I remember the acquisition of Bonzi Wells several years ago, where he looked like he should have retired already. And so that was something I was thinking about when I was preparing for this preview here, and that kind of might pave an opening for Troy Williams. A young athletic wing has shown some ability to shoot the three. You hope, though, that it doesn't get to that, because the Rockets, yeah, I think at their best, their ceiling, I think they need those three veteran guys to perform to their abilities. Like, I think if Troy Williams has cracked their rotation, I think that something has not gone as planned.
Yeah, and he's just, I think, too inconsistent from a mental standpoint to really hold up against some of the best teams. I think he's going to blow switches. He's not going to execute the scouting report. You could see that. And his shooting is certainly a question mark, although his athleticism is not. All right. So we're talking about the starting lineup. So you think, is Anderson going to start at the four?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the top units. What was it? It was, let's see, I had this here. We had Anderson, Ariza, Gordon, Harden, Harrell led the league in offensive rating among lineups with at least 150 minutes. That was in also, that was the the Rockets' best lineup for net rating. And so I don't see any way that you take Anderson out of the starting lineup. He led the entire team last year in net rating at 7.9, above Harden, above Capella, above any other Rocket. And so despite the reputation that, you know, it's taken a hit, despite how poorly he played in the postseason, he's still vital to this team. Just his ability, I mean, even setting aside how bad he is defensively, just that ability to set up 3 feet beyond the three-point line, it gives so much space to Chris Paul and James Harden. And so I think a lot of Rockets fans are really down on Ryan Anderson right now, just, you know, what happened in the postseason, also compounded by the excitement over potentially getting Carmelo Anthony and Ryan Anderson being the obstacle to that. But I think it's important to step back and remember that setting aside the contract, setting aside all those warts, he's still very important to this team. And he was statistically, I would say, just as important as anyone other than James Harden offensively.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And especially in the regular season, when other teams are going to be matching up more traditionally, that's a good time to play Anderson in the starting lineup, as opposed to when teams go small. He actually, I think in some ways, struggles more in those circumstances. What I don't think we'll see as much of is him at center, because they won't need to do that anymore, where they're just, all right, we're going to try and outscore people. They actually can have some defense. And I also predict that maybe if they get into a playoff series against a really good team, you know, after game one or two, especially if they get down in the series, then maybe we'll see Anderson's role get minimized and they'll start Tucker at the four if they're not going to be able to stop people. Because, I mean, that's whether that starting lineup will be able to stop people is going to be fascinating, right? Like, Paul is good. Ariza is still pretty good. Capella has the tools. He's pretty decent. And then Anderson and Harden are just awful. And so I think it'll be interesting to see whether that unit can stop people, or whether they really have to get into those lineups with either Mbah Mute or Tucker before they can be a quality defensive unit.
Right. I mean, do we still think Ariza is good?
I mean, he is. Now that I remember it, you've been kind of an Ariza hater for a while. And I do think there's something to be said for, all right, let's not coast on these guys' reputations and we'll look at it. But I mean, he's not a stopper. You know, I don't think he's that. I think his versatility to be able to guard 1 through 3 is good. He's not that strong, you know, against some of, you know, a Kawhi Leonard type. You know, I don't think he does that well against those type of guys who are really, you know, can get their shoulder into him. But, you know, I think he's a quality player in that he's not going to just get killed and take advantage of it. He's going to lock that guys down. No, but you're not going to put him out there and be like, oh man, we got to get this guy off of him. Like, he's just killing him.
Right. I think you would. I would say he's an average defender, average to slightly above average at this point. I think you'd say Chris Paul, elite. I don't know if you still would agree with that. I think Harden and Anderson are bad defenders. I think the guy, the wild card, is Capella. I think that's, you know, you have your lead dog at the perimeter in Chris Paul. Can Capella funnel everything into him again this year? Can he take on more responsibility? I think that's, when you're talking about the starting lineup, I think Capella is the guy you're looking at. And going back to your earlier point, I think Mbah Mute, I think that gives you so much ability. I think he's actually going to be your backup four. And so I think being able to take out Ryan Anderson and not need to extend Trevor Ariza, I think that's really going to be worth a couple of slots in and of itself in the defensive rating. And so that just gives you so many more options.
Yeah, I do think you make a good point there, that last year Ariza had to guard the best player on the floor and they played him as many minutes as he could handle, basically. You know, as if the other team had a good threat out there, he was your option to guard him. And now having other options there, it could help his offense and it might help him be more effective defensively in the minute that he is out there. So what do you think is the crunch time lineup for this team? It's always interesting because, and even more so with Paul, like Paul and Harden are now going to be out there. Eric Gordon, you could say maybe is one of their five best players, but the fit becomes difficult now if you're going to play him at the three. Tucker, you know, thinking certain lineups might be out there, you know, is it going to be Ariza? What happens to Anderson? Who's going to be the center? Is it going to be Capella? Is it going to be Nene? Are they going to go with no center at all? Very difficult questions for D'Antoni to sort out.
I felt like Paul Harden, I felt like Gordon is also a lock. I think Gordon is probably your third overall best player. I mean, it's debatable. Anderson might be more valuable, but Gordon can give you some of that that secondary, or I guess in this case, third level playmaking that Anderson doesn't give you. I feel like Gordon Lonzo lock for the crunch time lineup. And then, as you said, you have any two of Tucker, Ariza, Mbamute, Capella, Nene, Anderson, just depending on matchups. And I think we talked about this earlier. The fascinating thing is going to be seeing whether or not PJ Tucker can handle minutes at the five to close games. Now, he's nowhere near the player that Draymond Green is in terms of interior basket protection and the length and the athleticism, but can he plausibly play the five? Like, I think that opens up so many options for Mike D'Antoni to close out games. There's been so many times where also Capella hasn't been effective, and so this gives you a completely different route there. So you could see them going completely small. You could see them going to Nene, who still has a lot left in the tank. But I feel like Eric Gordon is up there as a lock.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of it depends who they're playing, too. In the regular season, I agree with you, especially because they can just say, hey, you know what, like, we're just going to outscore people. But, you know, with both Harden and Gordon out there, I guess now if you're going to say play either, that means you're playing either Ariza or Tucker at the four. But then, you know, with Harden and Gordon, those guys can't really guard the best wing threat. So now you're making both Harden and Gordon guard larger players. It's difficult. Now, those guys have some ability to switch because they're at least like built pretty good. So you're not worried as much about them getting posted up. So, you know, maybe it'll be the three guys on the perimeter and it'll be Tucker and Ariza. Or maybe if they really need some more defense, they can go with Ariza at the three and Mbamute at the four and Tucker at the five and say, hey, you know, we'll let Paul and Harden do all the scoring and we're just going to make it so difficult to score on you. But yeah, that's going to be a real question. And especially, you know, against Golden State, I mean, what do you think if Golden State goes to their lineup with Green at center, what do you think is the best Rocket lineup to counter that?
Right. And before I get to Golden State, just to go back, I would assume that if Harden and Gordon are both on the court together, that Harden is guarding the power forward, correct? And yeah. So presumably, let's say that you have, obviously, Paul is on whoever the better backcourt guard is. And so you have Paul and Gordon guarding the guards. You have Harden on the power forward. You have either Ariza or Tucker on the small forward. And then you have your center guarding your center. So to me, in any non-Golden State scenario, I think it perfectly makes sense to have Gordon out there because Harden, in that scenario, he's guarding the power forward. And he's not, you know, if it's the Spurs, he's not gassed now at the other end from guarding Pau Gasol because you have Chris Paul running the offense. So outside of Golden State, I think that's what's going to happen. I think you can hide Harden on the power forward. Now, Golden State, I mean, I don't know how you play Ryan Anderson against them. I mean, he's basically unplayable. And so at that point, what happens with Clint Capella? Is he going to be able to make a difference on the boards against that smaller lineup? Can he? I don't think so. So who's more of a threat at that point, Tucker or Clint Capella at the five?
I think that their initial plan is going to be to play Tucker at the five. I think that's a lot of the reason why he was acquired. I mean, if you had to look at all of the free agents who weren't stars who were available this offseason, you would have to say that Tucker falls into the category as a guy you can switch guard close to one through five in a pinch. It was probably the most Golden State antidote of anyone who was available that wasn't a superstar this offseason. So I think they brought him in. I think they're going to try him at center. And then it's just a question, though, of whether it's going to be Gordon or you're going to go with more defense in that lineup. They'll probably go with offense defense subs to the extent that you can, although that is going to be a little minimized with the reduction in timeouts under 2 minutes this season. All right, we'll be right back here, talk about the strengths and weaknesses of this Rockets team and get our predictions right after this. Back when I was a lawyer, I was responsible at times for trying to get new candidates for positions that we had open. And it was really just an enormous pain. You had to decide where were you going to post these jobs? Were you going to do it on something totally general? We even got some candidates from Craigslist at one point. Are you going to do it on a super specific legal site, which we did? Now, how are you going to correspond with all those people? Are you going to remember the password and go through all of those different apps? How are you going to rank all your candidates together when they're on all these different sites? I really wish that at the time I had known about ZipRecruiter because you can post your job to 100 plus job sites for free with just one click. Then their technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. Because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them. In In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. You don't have to juggle emails or calls to your office. You can screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Find out today why they've been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/capspace. That's a URL. Capspace, easy to remember because we talk about it all the time in the program. ZipRecruiter.com/capspace also lets them know that you came from us. ZipRecruiter.com/capspace. All right, so we know obviously three-point shooting is an enormous strength of this team. We know about the playmaking with Paul and Harden, but maybe a little more under the radar, what do you see as some of the strengths of this team?
I mean, I think, again, also, what were they in pace last year? I looked this up earlier.
There, I got it. It's
third. Third in pace.
Yes.
You had fourth in assist percentage. I guess that's not surprising. And I think you expect to improve on that now, because I think in any play which is not a result of a Harden pass, I mean, the outcome was always a Harden isolation out of those. And so now you have those kickouts to Chris Paul. So I think there's going to be a lot more ball movement there. I think where they can improve, I think while they were first in three-point attempts by far, they're 15th in three-point percentage. And so I think that just now having Chris Paul setting up James Harden, I think James Harden's overall percentage is going to improve. And so aside from that, I don't really see anything. I mean, we know they're going to be tremendous offensively. I think what we have to be looking at is where they can be improving. And I think for the Rockets, I think it's really on the glass. I think that was really one of the big problems, aside from the overall defense. 21st in defensive rebounding percentage, and this ties in with my criticism of Clint Capella, in that they just need better interior play to take that next step. They're 14th in overall rebound percentage. They were pretty decent on the offensive glass, 10th in offensive rebound percentage, but they really need to be able to protect their defensive glass. And so I think that's where the Rockets, I think they could take a next step. They have more rugged defenders now. I don't know that, you know, PJ Tucker and Bob Mute, these aren't guys that are going to help you on the glass, but I think they could do a better job of bodying guys up even on the perimeter. I think that's certainly going to help more over than having Lou Williams out there. And so I think there's nowhere that they can go but up in those categories.
Yeah, I think those are all good points. I think strengths, you would say versatility now in the lineup. They can go traditional with the Anderson at the four, Capella at the five. They can go with Tucker at the five, as we mentioned. I think they have pretty good depth. They're going to have some of the best bench units in the league, I would expect, with the ability to have either Paul or Harden on the floor at all times. Scoring without Harden was something they improved on last year, but was still a concern at times in the playoffs, and I think that's something that they can get better at. Weaknesses, we've mentioned the health, we've mentioned the crunch time offense, you mentioned the boards, and I think you can also look at mentality perhaps as well. I mean, this is a team that's had at times some pretty spectacular flameouts, where with Harden not having the greatest playoff resume in the world, Chris Paul, though he is, his own personal performance has generally been very good in the playoffs. He's also had his teams have had some inexplicable playoff performances. So, you know, are these guys really going to be able to focus and not have just kind of, you know, if they lose, have it be because they weren't good enough, not because they just kind of melt down in some weird way? I usually don't like to focus on those things, but especially with how things ended in game six for Harden, you have to at least question that to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, the same goes for Chris Paul. A lot of question marks for him. And I would also add into that, I think the overall age of the team, we talked about this, there isn't that young, bouncy athleticism off the bench. I mean, historically, I think back to the 90s Utah Jazz, where they would have Howard Eisley and Shannon Anderson coming off the bench, Brian Russell, just to infuse that energy for John Stockton and Karl Malone. The Rockets don't really have that outside of Clint Capella. And so you almost feel like, obviously, your best player in James Harden, he's in the prime of his career. But Chris Paul, now entering his age 32 year, we expect him, I think, to age like Steve Nash, but nobody knows. Is this the year that he takes a bit of a step back? I don't know. He doesn't rely on athleticism, but I mean, Father Time is undefeated. So you expect at some point some slippage. But as I said earlier, Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, are they going to regress to the mean in terms of their career norms of games played? Nene is getting older. So you don't don't have that youth on this roster. And so it's a long season. And so sometimes you need those young players for that energy. This Rockets team, there is a lot of positives to having a veteran team, the mentality, but you know, sometimes it's helpful to have young guys and they don't have that.
I agree with you. And Paul is an interesting one. We didn't talk about him in the regression candidates, but I talked about this Chris Fedor when he came on to talk about the Cavs. Paul is kind of in the same category as LeBron, only a year younger than him at this point, but where he just continues to play nearly as well every single year. It's probably not good money to predict that this will be the year that he finally starts to show some slippage. But if you look at it as like, hey, he's probably got, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, he's got a 25% chance of this being the year that he starts to show some slippage. And so that's certainly a probability when we're talking about what they're going to be that needs to be accounted for. So, all right, I'm going to do my prediction first here in terms of the regular season record. Their over-under is what, 55 and a half?
I believe so.
Let me just confirm that here. Yes, 55 and a half. I picked them for the over. I mean, they won 55 last year. They added Chris Paul. Lost guys, but nobody who adds up to Chris Paul. So, you know, I think I would probably peg them. I'm going to call it 58 wins for this group.
I said last season, what did I predict? Was it 51 and 31?
Yeah,
and
it's either 50 or 51 here. While you're talking, I'll find it.
Yeah. So I had them at 51, but I think and to quote myself, I hate to do that, but what I kept saying to myself is that why does this team, what leads us to believe that they can't repeat the success that they enjoyed in 2015 when they won 56 games? And so the same optimism here, but in this case, I feel like I have some backing in that you added a future Hall of Famer and you really didn't lose anything. And so I have to go with 60 and 22. I don't see any reason for them to slip offensively from second. I think that 18th ranked defense, I think there's potential that they can get into the top 10. And we talked about this last time on our preview when you interviewed me last year. The question that I brought up, and we had an interesting theoretical discussion there, was that, you know, and I don't remember, just throwing out the numbers, what I asked you was, is it better for the Rockets to potentially, let's say they're 7th in offense and something like 13th in defense, is that combination, is that better than 2nd and say 23rd? And so we tossed that around a bit. It turned out they were 2nd and 18th, and that translated to 55 wins. Now, of course, they weren't disastrous. I think people thought that they might be disastrous last year.
I was one of those people.
Yeah, and I thought so too. I thought there was potential that they would be absolutely disastrous, but they were bad, but it was passable at 18th. So I think that with the changes that they made, I really think that they can be better defensively. I think they will be better offensively, but of course, you know, there's not much room for improvement there, but I really truly think they can improve on that 18th rank there. And I think I'm going to go with 60 and 22.
Yeah. I mean, and I definitely totally understand that thinking. I mean, they were 55 last year, totally in line with that in terms of point differential. You added Chris Paul, like that definitely makes plenty of sense. By the way, you were 51 last year, so good job. That's probably one of the higher Rockets predictions. So congratulations on getting that one right. So I'm guessing your best case scenario, if you're going with 60, is going to be pretty high for these guys.
I would have to go with, let's say, 65 and 17. I think Harden and Paul mesh from the gate. Paul takes the pressure off of Harden. There's no chemistry concerns. I mean, Harden trusting Paul in a way that he didn't trust Ty Lawson. And I thought Ty Lawson was the savior, and obviously that didn't work out. For them to reach 65 games, I think you see Clint Capella take the next step and really get into that next level of rim protection and just overall modern age center play. I think that's what would have to happen for everything to be clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, I would say 63 for me, but similar thinking. They could be the number one offense and they could be the number 8 or 7 defense, maybe, you know, and maybe because they have Chris Paul, they overperform their point differential by a little bit. What do you see? I'll go first on the worst case scenario. I mean, to me, worst case, like, you know, 52, 53, like it's, I mean, and that would be, you know, obviously we're not talking about a ton of guys missing a lot of time, but maybe Paul just, you know, this is the year that he's not quite the same guy. Maybe James Harden last year was the high watermark of his career. He dropped back maybe more to where he was 2 years ago. But I mean, I don't see them getting much below that. And that's part of why I felt pretty comfortable with their over under, because I see their best case as much higher than their over under, than their worst case is lower.
Right. I struggle with this one because you look at the James Harden era, historically, right? So his first year, they win 45 games. He's not a proven superstar yet. The next year, they get Dwight Howard, they win 54 games. The next year, Dwight Howard's out for most of the year, they win 56 games. The next year, it's a complete disaster. They go down to 41 games. The following year, he's the only star on the team, and they come back up to 55 wins. And so I've kind of said that your baseline level with a happy James Harden, even as the only star, it seems like a happy James Harden translates to 55 wins. I'm not saying that that's the floor. I think my floor is 50 wins, but it seems like a happy James Harden means 55 wins for the Rockets. And so you look at this team right now, it's ironic because I think if you had added Carmelo Anthony, your ceiling would have been higher, but your floor actually would have been lower than it is right now with Ryan Anderson because of that chemistry question. I think with this team, I think with Harden and Paul, the way things came together, I think there probably won't be any locker room meltdowns there or any concerns over sharing the ball. But I think when you introduce Melo, specifically with his history with Mike D'Antoni, I think that would have been potential for problems. But I think not having that, barring injury, I just don't see how they finish lower than 50 wins.
I agree with you. Let's talk about the postseason now. I don't like to do this for a lot of teams, but because really since the moment they got Chris Paul, it's really been all about their matchups with Golden State and San Antonio. Maybe Oklahoma City is in that category as well. First off, I guess we can say, like, do you expect them to be the number two seed? Is that what your prediction would be?
It's so difficult to write off the Spurs. I mean, every single year it seems that you're thinking that that's the year that they slip a little bit and then somehow they win 60 games again. So, you know, I would say possibly, yeah, let's say the second seed. I mean, I think it's difficult to see the Rockets finishing behind the Spurs, just given the rosters.
Yeah, and with this Kawhi Leonard injury that right. We haven't heard anything on it as well. I actually predicted both of them for 58 wins, but that was before we knew with the Spurs any issue with Kawhi. So I'll probably revise that once we find out where he's at before the season starts. And I do think that this team now should have the advantage against the Spurs, especially since I think the Spurs got a little bit worse potentially, unless Rudy Gay can give them a lot more than we think he can. And you know, a lot of it'll getting that second seed is going to be huge for this group. I think if they're third, they don't have home court, or God forbid fourth, and they have to play the Warriors in the first round, that would be a major issue for them. But you have to imagine they'll probably be pushing it in terms of wins. But so do you think, where do you see them ending up? And assume they get that second seed, do you see them getting to the conference finals? And then what kind of chance do you give them against Golden State?
Yeah, I mean, before we get to that Golden State question, I just have to see how this plays out during the regular season. It's just so, in my mind, inconceivable to see anybody be able to challenge Golden State without them suffering a major injury. I don't need to sing their praises. We've all seen the way they perfectly click as a unit. And just looking at the various hypotheticals of what has to go right for the Rockets in terms of being able to even be on par with Golden State, I mean, you're looking at the lineups, that the question marks of how do you even compete with them? And you're looking at, okay, do you play Clint Capella versus PJ Tucker? And it all comes back to James Harden and Chris Paul absolutely have to be clicking on just firing on all cylinders for all of those games and to even have a chance, because you're very much limited in the other spots. And so I look at this Rockets team, it's really unfortunate because, and I felt this way about last year's team as well, in that I think in a non-Golden State world, really in any other era, you would feel good about this Rockets team entering the year as probably a title favorite. I mean, would you agree with that?
Sure.
They have everything. I mean, and it shows just how unfair the environment is, in that you have two top 10 players. You have just this perfect mix of gritty role players. I mean, it's essentially basically the perfect formula that you saw throughout the early 2000s and 90s for a championship team. And now you're looking at this roster and you're like, how do we compete with Golden State with this lineup of four to five all-stars?
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable that a 50 65-win team could avoid giving up like any of maybe their two or three best players, and then adds Chris Paul, future Hall of Famer, top 10 player in the NBA, and they're still like not even close to the championship favorite. It is remarkable, this era that we're living in right now. To add on there, you know, I think I would have to decide whether I would think it would be 5 or 6 against Golden State. I mean, it's really with the way this Golden State team is, the depth that they've added, and now their guys could drop off a little bit. I mean, I think that's really, you know, maybe if Steph Curry and Kevin Durant aren't, and Draymond Green aren't quite the players that they were last year, you know, just due to aging, or Green losing a little athleticism or whatever, you know, maybe that's how teams get back to them. But, you know, so as we've talked about here, the Rockets probably have more age-related regression risk than the Warriors do at this point. So it's really difficult to say even that, you know, you're getting there to if Golden State's regressed and Houston doesn't. So I think I will tentatively pick them to make it to the conference finals. I still really like this OKC team. The Spurs are always a threat. We'll see what happens with the Kawhi, and maybe some trades can happen that would change this around a little bit. So I'm not like super confident in projecting them to get to the conference finals, but I think you would have to be the favorites at this point. I think, you know, a 5 or 6 game defeat would probably be what I'd predict it against Golden State.
Yeah, I think they'll make the conference finals. I think whatever the issues were last season for Harden, I think Chris Paul will help him overcome that. I think they will get to the conference finals, and I think they, unfortunately, I think they just don't have enough to go head-to-head with the Warriors. I think they would lose in 5 games.
All right, well, that'll do it here. Let everyone know where they can follow your work, and we'll get you out of here.
Thanks, Nate. You guys can follow me at red94.net. So that's red spelled out and then the number 94.net, and on Twitter at red94, and that's all spelled out as well.
All right, thanks again. One of the few 3-time preview guests. It's always great to have you on. We'll look forward to following your work throughout the season. And don't forget about our sponsors today. Draft, use that cap space code to enter your first game free. And also ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com/capspace will allow you to post your jobs for free. And those codes are important because they let them know that you came from us. Thanks again for your support. We'll be back tomorrow finishing out these team previews. Till then, thanks again to Draft for sponsoring today's program. It's not too late to join the highest rated fantasy basketball app, Draft. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes or right from your computer on draft.com. For a limited time, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit using my promo code CAPSPACE. Play in a real money game for free in a snake draft, not a salary cap. Much easier for casual players to get involved with that. Just make sure you use that promo code CAPSPACE on your first deposit.